Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the HITECH Information Blocking Task Force Work Group 1, looking at statutory terms and provisions. Quick roll call, and then we'll get started with our continued discussion on health information networks and exchanges. Andy Trescott, I don't think he's on the line yet. Michael will be absent. Cheryl Turney?
Cheryl Turney is on.
Thank you. John Cansey?
Here.
Denny McComb? Yeah, okay. And Cynthia Fisher?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Great. Okay, I hope that Andy is going to be able to join us, but in the meantime, I'm going to turn it over to Mark to get us started.
Okay, great. Hey, everyone. And Lauren, I actually just remembered, I think Andy might not be able to join this call, but if you want to reach out to him and see, you're welcome to. I guess, there's the agenda for today. And with this group, I can share my screen momentarily, but I think we probably, and you all members can guide the conversation as you'd like, but I was hoping to maybe try to work to get some more clarity on our definitions of health information networks and exchanges and electronic health information and price information, because I think where we left off on the last call, there were some different opinions about the direction we should take. And I know Andy had kind of asked that everyone in the meantime go onto the Google Doc and try to put pen to paper to some of the suggestions that the folks were throwing out there last time. So I'm pulling up the Google Doc now, and I guess before we proceed, does that sound like a good place to focus today, or does anyone have any other issues they'd like to shift to before we do that?
I think that's a good place to start. This is Cheryl.
Great. Great. Thanks, Cheryl. Okay. Lauren or others, can you see my screen now? I need to zoom in, I know, but I just shared the screen.
Yep, we can see it. Just waiting to zoom in.
Great. Okay. Do you guys want to have any thoughts since the last time? Maybe we'll start with health information. Well, would you like to start with health information network or EHI? What's your preference?
I think we should start with EHI. And just so you know, I have some trouble getting in the Google Doc. I actually have to do it outside of my company computer because for some reason it's blocking it. So I was having some issues with my home computer this week because I had no internet, but apologize for that.
Oh, yeah, no problem. And I've actually heard in the other work groups, I think there have been some issues when you try to open it on your work. There's some security blocking, ironically, going on. So yeah, no problem. Sorry about that, and definitely understand.
Okay.
Well, I have pulled up the as Andy kind of talked about last time. He broke, I believe he and Michael worked on this, and they broke it down by discussion and then regulatory text recommendation and preamble recommendation. But if I recall, especially the reg text recommendation may be different, or there might be multiple directions we want to go. So I don't know, do folks have thoughts after, having some time to think about this?
I know that after we had the meeting and then we had a follow-up conversation regarding the definition, we all have a better understanding of where this definition came from. So I think there's less ambiguity about that. I know, Cynthia, you had some points that you had made in a previous meeting, but I think with where we are, I'm happy with the definition the way it currently stands.
Cynthia, do you have any thoughts or?
Yes, I am in transit, so I apologize. I'm trying to pull up the app on my phone as I'm
okay.
in transit.
Nope.
I'll be able to speak better once I'm able to pull it all up. I apologize.
Nope. Oh, no problem.
Well,
actually,
I think
I do want
Andy
to note
highlighted.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, in the last time where we got bogged down was where we were talking about should there be some additional wording that talks about information being electronic as well as other, and where that got us into a little bit of trouble is that information could be, you know, a tumor sample, or a blood sample, not just, you know, data. And so that's where we got bogged down on that particular point. And so by clarifying it, we could be essentially making it more complicated because, again, we're talking about information being electronic. But, you know, information, is it, you know, are we only talking about data? And
yeah,
that's kind of where that got bogged down. That refers to Andy's notes underneath.
Okay, and so this one you're talking about, Cheryl, is the or not Cheryl? Sorry.
Yeah, this is Cheryl.
Cheryl. Okay,
yeah.
Great. Are you talking about like the preamble? Like we have the preamble recommendation that talks about applying both to human readable and machine readable. So I think that recommendation. It seemed like everyone was on board with that, but you're saying that the preamble clarification would be okay, but you're not thinking that. A reg text amendment is necessary in that
right.
regard. Okay.
Right, exactly.
Great. And while Cynthia is pulling up the stuff on her computer, I did want to note, Andy did email me, and I'm not sure if you all listened in on the help committee meeting yesterday, but he wanted to say that he thought there was interesting commentary about audit trails, and he's been thinking about it, and he thought there might be some kind of modification the group should consider to the EHI definition to add either audit trail, which might be too vague, or including something like including records of who has accessed that data to the definition in some capacity. So he wanted me to raise that to the group for discussion as well. I'm not sure how you all think it would fit in or whether it's more implementation than actual definition, but just wanted to throw it out there.
Well, the thing of it is, in today's world under HIPAA, a patient has the right to ask, you know, who that data has been shared with anyway. So, you know, I don't know if this came up related to the data provenance discussion that we had. I wasn't in the meeting yesterday that you're talking about, so I don't know what the frame of reference was that was around it. But, you know, certainly we do need data provenance. But, again, I think the guidance we got from ONC was simpler is better and let it evolve because essentially an audit trail, which I consider to be metadata about the data, could become bigger than the data itself. And then what kind of burden are we putting on the sharing of that? I mean, at the end of the day, what we need to really focus on is to have the ability for the data to be shared and to have a good record of where that data came from so that you will be able to provide that information upon request. And again, I've been focusing on let's focus it at the organization or source ID rather than, you know, an individual, because again, that then becomes, once you go back to a provider or facility, they should have records of all the people that have updated it. I don't know if I, as a payer, would need to know that. All I would need to know is that, you know, hospital ABC is the source.
And just as far as context. There was a help committee hearing yesterday with some different experts testifying about their reaction to our rule and the CMS rule, and I think it came up in that context. But That was just the background.
Right, and yeah. I think the data provenance discussion we've had under the USCDI takes care of that, but I don't know if it really needs to be in the preamble.
This is Cynthia. I just from the patient perspective, if you look, I mean, the whole emphasis of cures was to really get, I mean, we all know, let's not kid ourselves, that there's big data all behind us and the outside of HIPAA connected to our financial system, connected to payment is a substantial amount of health information and there really is no privacy. But if we look in within the provider system and HIPAA and the definition of health information, the patient isn't getting access. And so the whole goal of this entire effort is to put it in the hands of the patient. And, you know, I think as we look at this definition, we just want to make sure that broad enough tools can be delivered to the patient so the patient has access to their record longitudinally and readily. So much like going to a restaurant, you see what's on the menu, patients should be able to see pricing. Now, pricing is going to be broader. It's going to be broader and outside of the individual record. But as the patient gets care and the choices of medicines and the choices of therapeutic modalities are price differential around in the surrounding geography of the patient and the physician can work together in making that decision when we electronically disclose that to the patient. And if we go back to the health information definition of HIPAA, it includes past, present, and future mental health and clinical health, as well as past, present, and future payment. So, you know, you can look at when I'm a patient, I'd like to know the price, just like any other industry. I'd like to know my choices. I get to choose my provider based on access and availability, and then I also want my health record of my own personal clinical and professional care. Then the other part of it is part of my health record would be also my payment record, which is part of health information. So I should be able to have all at one time the itemized list of what was price quoted to me and what my payment is, so that I have negotiating leverage when I've been charged for something erroneously or egregiously. And just like in a restaurant or in the grocery store, we can compare the price to the actual bill. Because we do know of patients being charged and going to debt collection with chargemaster prices, even though they have insurance coverage and they're covered in other ways. So, you know, empowerment is just beyond the individually identifiable, traceable to the clinical information. It's actually, we need to look at changing the game for the really consumer-driven care here, as we're in this moment of time of great transition of empowering the patient with actually being able to control their health and their wealth. So I think as we look at the definition, we want to look at both and, you know, think of how we use Uber, think of how we use our phone apps for our banking. This can all be done and applied, and we want to make sure that we're not entangling ourselves and entangling the organizations to stay status quo, because status quo is broken.
Mark, this is John. I've had my hand up for a while.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, John. I didn't see the hand up. I feel like I think you can just chime in whenever. But, yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, because I was failing to chime in, I decided to try raising my hand. It's all right.
sorry.
So getting back to Cheryl's point about the Andy question about audit trails and the point that Cheryl raised about the fact that consumers already have federal rights, was the context, or do you know if the context at the HELP committee was that people are blocking access to audit trails? Because I've never heard that one before, and then I'm inclined not to, consistent with my earlier comments and the ones I've made in the Google Docs, I'm inclined not to make definition any longer with more prepositional phrases, harder to interpret and enforce. I think cleanliness and clarity should rule. So if there isn't a compelling reason to start talking about audit trails, then I wouldn't be in favor of adding anything.
No, so I listened in on the committee meeting But I can't say I was listening. I was doing other things during it, so I can't really speak necessarily. I think what they were talking about was not that it's being audit trails are being blocked, but more generally speaking, that data provenance is important and it's really essential that patients and others understand, you know, where the information has been, who's touched it, and you know, that's an essential aspect of all of this, but I don't believe there was a specific issue of blocking audit trails, no. And my, you know, my take is that when Andy emailed me, it was just a brief email, and I think that it's a really important issue. I don't know that it would necessarily fit in the definition of EHI, in my opinion. If you all have other recommendations, that's fine. But, you know, I think, like Cheryl said, it might be addressed in other capacities in the rule, or just as implementation goes, you know, how we're trying to do this. But I don't know in the scope of EHI definition for info blocking whether it fits. But that's just me.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. This is Cynthia, and that, but I do think it might have room for addressing in a preamble because it is helpful for the patient to know where the data is shared, and you know, in other avenues of their digital life, Google, Facebook, you can see the trail through a click and be able to pull up your history, the history. So I think it's totally traceable and doable without extra effort, and perhaps we cover it in the preamble.
Okay. I guess if folks have, if you're able to, you know, not necessarily right now, I know there's a new issue, not to put you on the spot, but if you have thoughts on, you know, those recommendations for preamble, definitely welcome. I guess maybe bringing it. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm sorry, but I have to weigh in here because to say that that would be done without burden is not accurate. I mean, the way that Google or someone else has created their ability to show you the breadcrumbs is not the way any of the payers have built their systems, because they weren't built initially for user facing. So it's not that it can't be done, but it isn't going to be automatic, and it would be time required in order to produce that type of result, because I don't know any payer, and I've worked with multiple, that could do that today.
Yeah, I guess also another consideration, I think that's a really good point, Cheryl, is just also like the presentation that O1C did, you know, we kind of based our definition of EHI on this construct of previous laws and you know, trying to look at what Congress was trying to do and what EHI would mean. And it just seems to me that audit trails, again, maybe there's a clarification in preamble that could be made, and it sounds like we're all on the same page that the definition shouldn't be changed for audit trails, but we just have to be careful, I think, is what you're saying, Cheryl, how far we go, because we just have to look at what the scope of what we're trying to do here would be.
Right, and we are within the USCDI task force indicating that data provenance is going to be a requirement. So at the end of the day, that ability to do that, I don't know if it'll necessarily be a breadcrumb, but to identify where the data came from and where it went will be a requirement in the future. But to what level of granularity, I think all of that needs to be discussed. But it's already a right in HIPAA, and I don't know if it merits us having to call it out again, is my point.
Well, I think the issue is information blocking. You know, it's not being provided to the patient today, and they don't know how to even get access to where their data is being shared. And so they have a right to know where their providers and payers are maybe sharing their data.
Okay, well, you know, just to keep us moving, I don't know, John, do you have any other thoughts? I think you were pretty clear kind of what you were thinking on that. So maybe Cynthia, you might, I think about if there are any some preamble clarifications you want to you know, propose for the group, and, you know, feel free to add them to the Google Doc and we can talk about them next time. Again, I don't want to put you on the spot since this is a new issue. I guess circling back to the definition of electronic health information, the screen right now. And so I think where we were last time is Andy and Michael had come up with some pretty minor proposed updates. They had, I think they're all underlined and highlighted in the one on the screen. If you can't see the screen, it was just including as defined in HIPAA to talk about EPHI, just as a clarification. And I think they changed can to could, which in my perspective, it really doesn't change the meaning really at all of the definition. And then also, I think there's this clause about or is derived from identifiable patient data. I don't know, do folks have thoughts? I know that before we ONC did the presentation, there were different views about the breadth of this definition. And I know, John, you had ideas about maybe ways to make it less confusing. Do folks have thoughts on that?
Yeah, in general, this is John. In general, I think I may be in the minority in trying to simplify the definition. I think the perception of the other side of the argument was that we didn't want to risk in any way narrowing the definition. I'm much more focused on having it be something that those organizations that have to comply with can easily understand and don't have to hire attorneys to just understand the words, which we have now lost on the screen.
Oh, yeah. Let me write that up there.
I'd rather look at the lake, but.
Yeah. I don't know if I told you the background. That's actually right where I got married a couple of years ago. It's in North Carolina, but it makes me feel happy looking at it, yeah.
Good. It's good that you think of your marriage and you're still happy. That's
Yeah, I definitely do. Anyway, not to interrupt, so go on. What you were saying.
So I'm trying to remember the rationale behind the highlighted or is derived from identifiable patient data, because I feel like if it's no longer identified, then I'm not sure how those trying to comply with the regulation would even know to include it in a request such that they wouldn't be accused of or guilty of information blocking. So again, when you include things I'm a bit of a maybe a 90-10 or 95-5 kind of suggesting that kind of approach in this regulation, that if we eliminated 95% of all information blocking, that would be awesome. And I think trying to sweep out the corners with the last half a percent is going to dramatically increase the confusion, cost, and burden of complying with the regulation. So that's basically the whole basis of my argument.
Yeah, and so, I think I think that clause, like that addition, had to do with the conversation we were having about de-identifiable information and how we are not including de-identifiable information. So I think that was supposed to be a point of clarification in the definition, but it might make it more confusing. Anyway, Cheryl, sorry to interrupt.
No. I was just saying, you know, by including this, and maybe this is, I think, originally this, I'm not sure who brought this into it, but so if a patient said, all right, where is our data being used? Where's my data being used? By including this comment, then that would mean any research that was being done, or in some cases we have vendors that gather data on behalf of employer groups. And as a part of doing business with that vendor, the vendor requires that they are able to de-identify the data and use it in a benchmarking database. So the individual, then we would provide data to a vendor on behalf of an employer group. That data goes into multiple scenarios. Well, then that vendor then sells that de-identified data to, you know, hundreds of customers. this requirement would then mean that when we identify that vendor as a recipient of the data, that recipient would then have to provide the hundreds of customers that actually get that de-identified data in that benchmarking database. And is that really going to be meaningful to the patient, and is that what was intended? And I think that's the same use case I brought up, you know, when this was first brought up. I'm not saying one way or the other, but that's what would have to happen if this wording stays in there.
So would you prefer it not be in there?
It depends on who the burden is on. If the burden is on the receiving organization and not the covered entity, then, you know, I don't have a dog in that fight. If the burden is on the covered entity, which would be as a payer, then I would rather that data not be in there, because I don't know all the hundreds of people that vendor, who's not even our vendor, is going to give that data to.
Mark, this is John. I'm trying to respond to your question, and I'm leaning towards agreeing, yes, that I think I'm in favor of leaving it out. I'm trying to, can anyone articulate the argument? What information blocking are we scenarios are we preventing by speaking about formerly identified data?
The only information blocking I can see in this case, though, is that the patient never knows their data is being used by those hundreds of other players. And there's no way that I would know that it's being used. Because, again, in this use case I presented, it's a vendor of our employer group. It was an ASO group, so they own the responsibility of maintaining that data as a covered entity, and they've allowed the vendor to use it in a de-identified database that then gets sold to, you know, thousands of customers. So the patient never knows that basically their claim data is going to all those places.
Well, and there's a difference between, I mean, we absolutely want patients to have a right to know what the patient should have a right to know, but this is an information blocking regulation. So this is my understanding. The intent of this regulation is to prevent the circumstances where organizations have refused to share information intentionally or through neglect or misunderstanding, but information hasn't been shared in a way that would have been beneficial to the healthcare system or the patient. And so I don't think we're trying to create new rights to know stuff. We're trying to prevent the circumstances where information has been blocked, right?
Yes, so this is Cynthia. And so, you know, the patient, most patients today don't even know that their information's going and being resold. This is the information blocking to the patient. And so having the comprehension and the choice to say yay or nay, isn't that real privacy protection in some ways? And also wanting to empower the patient to actually have transparency into what's really going on with their health data? And, you know, one can argue that it gets de-identified and can easily be re-identified. So the real issue here is to empower the patient with being able to drive better health and wealth management. So we've
occasionally called on examples from retail and financial industries, and I assert that none of us have a clear understanding, nor could gain one, in terms of how our de-identified data is being used in retail or finance.
Okay. So I guess does the group want to leave this or is derived from identifiable patient data in there? Or should I maybe take it? Is anyone in favor of having it in there? I think it was something Andy was just kind of spitballing on potentially.
I'm in favor of taking it out on the basis that I don't know what bad thing it prevents, and it seems to have great potential for unintended consequences.
Is anyone opposed to taking it out?
I'm not opposed because I don't think it provides any clarity. I think it makes it more confusing.
Okay.
And this is Michael.
Cynthia?
I'm sorry.
This
is Michael. Sorry for being late. I'll talk when I can. I can't talk much, but I agree. I don't know that it prevents anything, and I don't know that it does anything but make it more confusing. So I'm all in favor of taking it out.
Okay, great.
Well,
thanks, Michael.
I find it interesting because last week, you know, when we were on the call, I was, you know, looking at a broad definition, but I thought that that HHS had, ONC had put that in because they wanted to, the phrase is out and I can't remember what it just said. It was just taken out. I was going to read it.
Let me.
Can you just click
it
someplace else or put it underneath it so that we know? Or is derived from identifiable patient data. So is the concerns here that you don't want the patients to know where their identifiable patient data is being
we're trying to write a regulation that allows patients to have access to their data and to allow the healthcare system to freely share data that's in the interest of health and health care. Once the data has been, calling on my examples of retail, internet retail, brick and mortar retail, or the finance industry, once data has been identified, it gets reused in lots and lots of ways. I would say most of which are not nefarious, but it's de-identified data. And it's not the intent of this regulation to require the sharing of data that's de-identified. And the consequences of trying to broaden that definition to include what's essentially de-identified data that's been derived from data that used to be identified data, I think the interpretation, implementation, and enforceability of that is utterly, it's impossible.
Okay, so I understand your point is your concern is that it's de-identified and then it's re-identified by other industries in many, many ways for market research or other avenues. And so basically you're saying that if it's derived from de-identified and re-identified and it's now in another industry, then you don't want that to be trailed onto the patient. So I understand what you're saying, but I also understand that I do believe it's important that the patient is made fully aware to whom that is brokered from their health provider and payers, to whom that information is going to be shared, de-identified, and possibly re-identified.
Well, that's a HIPAA right to know where your data has been disclosed from covered entities. That right already exists under federal law. It only applies to HIPAA.
Patients don't really get that today. So we want to make sure that's given to patients. And then I can agree with this because big data all behind it.
Hang on, Cynthia. If a covered entity is not granting a patient a federally guaranteed right, they're in violation of HIPAA and can be penalized, and there is a process for that.
That's a subject for another matter, but routinely, it's not identified with the patient.
Well, then what you just told me is that people violate federal law.
Right, that's an enforcement.
Ambiguously, it provides to the patients, but, you know, specifically, it would be a good thing for patients to actually know that with transparency. Secondly, I do understand how you all would like to have it out and why, and I can agree with that. However, I do also believe that the patients should be made fully aware and be very transparent to how their data is being used, because it is the idea.
This is Michael. I think we're all on the same page that we agree that whether it's a law that currently exists or whether it's something that we're writing regulation, we agree that the enforcement should be happening. The right should be honored. And if it's not, then that, again, is an enforcement issue. I don't know that that one little statement did anything other than confuse the issue to achieve what we're trying to accomplish, which is the sharing of that. And what we're trying to do is get this definition together. So I think that everybody – I don't know that anybody's in disagreement on this. What I heard was that we're all – in agreement to take it out, and the definition was fine the way it was. Is that correct?
And so could we just, you're going to put it there. Great, thanks. Thanks a lot. That's just as helpful to have that language that you
sure.
just added.
Sure, no problem. And you know, definitely, I think, like Michael said, we're trying to move forward, but, you know, Cynthia, others, you know, look it over and you know, if you have any further thoughts on that clause. I do think that, like, having it in there, basically what, in my opinion, what it was doing was making a point that we already are making about the identified information not being included, that, you know, so I do think it was a bit confusing the way it was written. So I guess just to keep on the definition of electronic health information, looks like the only other changes, and Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, that Michael and Andy had included are after EPHI, including a parenthetical about as defined in HIPAA, and then changing can to could be used. So what are people's thoughts on those additions, and whether is there anything else that should be changed?
And Mark, this is John. I'm on record as lobbying for deleting that entire or phrase, but I understand I'm in the minority, so I have nothing further to
grab. Yeah, let me note. So just so I'm clear, so you want all of this?
Through the word identify. No. Through the word individual. So if it read any other information that identifies the individual and is transmitted or maintained in electronic media, I just think it's so much clearer and easier to understand. That's just Kansky's opinion, and I'm just one guy here.
Okay, how about I'll make a note, John? Because, like I said, we, you know, in throughout this process, if that's really, like, you feel strongly about that, I think we can have, and Michael, again, correct me if I'm wrong, we can have multiple opinions. And you could kind of make a note that that's your feeling. So I'll just make a note on that. Oh, shoot. Not that. Sorry. That's not it.
Oh, all right. I got reconnected. I don't know what happened to my phone. That was the weirdest thing. Hello?
Yes,
okay, so I'm back on. I didn't even dial a number, so all of a sudden I got a busy signal. I was just going to say with what John said, I would prefer we leave in the or statement because this is referenced in HIPAA, and I don't think it's anything that people are commonly aware of. But, you know, even with the safe harbor methods for de-identification, if you have someone with a rare medical condition, there's always the opportunity that you can easily identify that person, even though the 16 elements have been or 18 elements have been eliminated, especially in rural areas or with very specific health concerns. So I do think we need to keep that or in there. That's the first or, when you were up with, or with respect to which there's a reasonable basis to believe the information could be used to identify the individual.
Yep.
So you're saying to keep the first or?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I'm going back to your previous point. Is ORAs derived from identifiable patient data? If there is information derived by identifiable patient data for that patient and it's not shared with the patient, that could negatively impact the patient's health. So I just want to flag that, that if the patient is information blocked from synthesis of their identifiable patient data, that could, you know, that could affect their care, then we are information blocking on something that could provide improved quality and improved diagnoses. So I just want to flag that too from a patient standpoint, that as you look at the remove proposed addition that we just did, we may be negatively impacting the future of patient care.
How could that happen though, Cynthia? I'm not following your point, because if it's not identifiable and it's a data set that's derived from identifiable patient data, how would it be used that it could negatively impact the patient's health care?
If there's a synthesis of data from identifiable data that, say, even charts a trend, and it's derived from identifiable patient data, and it's electronic, and it provides information of that patient versus a norm or an average or median, it could be a data analytical factor that is derived that would be helpful as a part of that patient record. So ultimately, it could be the results of an analysis of that identifiable patient information compared to a broader group and charted and provided into the hands of the patient in the EHR or in a app, for instance, that comes out of that provider or EHR vendor or developer. I just put that, I would like to add that in to, as a consideration of, you might be wiping out a whole new broad industry for better and improved care management, and that might be for diabetics, that might be for a broad range of rare disease patients compared to a norm or a trend. So I think we just have to not box ourselves in that we're able to withhold information for a patient that would not improve their care and care decisions. And that could, you know, so I just would like to have that in there. If you could add my comment, please, on underneath the removed addition. And then secondly, I just want to ask the group how you all see that getting access to pricing versus as part of the electronic health information that gives us the right to pricing as well as the right to payment history. How do you foresee this definition ensuring that the patient in the future will have readily available digital access of that information along with their clinical?
Well, Cynthia, two things. First of all, I think the second question you asked, we have to leave for another day, because right now we're charged with a specific responsibility here to come up with these definitions. And if we keep going down these rabbit holes, we're never going to get this done. But the first one is the use case that you, example you just gave, is exactly the same use case that I just described 10 minutes ago. Regarding, you know, third parties that do data analytics on identifiable patient data. I understand what your intent is, but again, in the example that I provided to you, we have hundreds of employer groups who own their data or control that data. They allow a vendor to use it, and that vendor gives it to sells it to hundreds of people for normative databases, which is doing exactly what you just said, and we're unaware of who any of those customers are. So how could we potentially ever provide that data to the patient, and what's the benefit the patient's going to get out of it? Are you basically saying now that you don't, you're wanting to block the ability to use that data that way? Because if that's the case, then I think we need to do more than just refine this definition.
I'm not saying to block any data. Please, that's a misstatement. I'm just flagging from the patient perspective, getting access to trends and a quick chart analysis of them against a norm that might be part of their care service. But I just throw that out there and throw it in as a flag and wanted to provide that use case as we consider that. And I do understand your concern, Cheryl, for the broad folks that you sell that data to.
Any data, Cynthia. That's what I was trying to say. Our employer groups, as part of their contracts with vendors, give the vendor the right to sell the data. We don't sell any data at all. Their other payers do. Blues do not.
Okay, well, I think this is really a good conversation. Cynthia, were there any notes you wanted me to make? You had mentioned I want to make sure I capture everything.
It's just a flag on the use. Under that is just to say, you know, there's a use case where having the patient having access to electronic access and it should not be blocked from having access to to analytics that maybe part of the software tools used by the provider and used by the application of where they're receiving their care that compares their identifiable data trends, for instance, against a broader population base and helps them in their care management. And so we want to make sure that we're not excluding relevant portions of the electronic health record that is patient data compared to a broader population norm for better healthcare diagnoses management. You know, so I think that. Would be what, you know, just on the other side of the flip of the coin. I understand Cheryl's concerns, and then this is just the other flip of the coin.
Okay, great. I tried to document that, but feel free to go in and update it. But I'm just going to say that you're considering recommendations for preamble. Is that fair? Or do you want to just...
I just think this is just here as a note.
Okay.
I just think we should consider it. And then I think, you know, I disagree with Cheryl because I don't think it's a rabbit hole for a patient to try to make a care decision by part of their electronic health record is both the price and the payment. And just like when we go get our car repaired, we get, you know, you get the price and you get the payment and you get the itemized listing or you get it in a grocery store, you get it in a restaurant. So that's part of their record. And so as we look at electronic health information as it applies to the broader definition in HIPAA, how are we as a committee here looking at this definition that we can provide those tools in the future to patients and physicians as they look at the appropriate modality? And an example I give you is a real crisis concern for many pre-diabetics and diabetics on the substantial change in a new medicine that many have had no idea it was going to cost them $1,000 to $1,500 more a month until after the fact, and then they had to go back to their doctors and ask for their old diabetes regimen. So these types of things can be prevented that put patients' health at risk and pocketbooks in duress. So
right,
those are the examples why we need to have, how do we have this definition, make sure that if it's not patient identifiable, the patient can get, you know, get that broad access to price choices.
But this is the thing that I think, I don't think we're actually disagreeing, Cindy. I think you're actually asking for something completely different. And what you're looking for are benchmarks, risk analysis, social determinants of health, other factors that are used in order to determine healthcare decisions. That's not ever derived from identifiable patient data. The problem I was trying to present on that is that most of the covered entities are not the ones selling that data, so we wouldn't know who it's been sold to. That's the problem I was trying to present. What you're talking about is that you're looking for more of the risk analysis, the scores, the benchmark, the underwriting that goes into how those pricing decisions are made. That's a completely different thing, a completely different set of data, and I don't know if the definition is where that belongs. To me, some of those things are things that need to be brought up in the US CDI if you're looking for that to be data that should be shared with a patient in terms of what is included, because the definition itself can't cover that really mountain of activity that's going on today, and I think that's where the wording is getting confused.
Yeah, Cheryl, I just was looking at price and payment, so that when they get the bill, they, if it doesn't match the price in the future, they have the tools in their hand to negotiate and resolve and fix, just like we do in any other industry. And so just that as a flag, just keeping that as a flag, because the HIPAA definition of health information includes payment information and price, along with the electronic identification.
And that's all. We didn't take that out. You'll see it's still on the paper. I know you're not in a place where you can see it, but it's still there.
I see it. I just want to make sure that it addresses that. If you all feel it addresses that, as long as it's identified to the individual, that's the conflict, to say if it's identified to the individual, there might be pricing information that's not identified to the individual.
Well,
but
and
if you all think it can be accomplished where you can see pricing information that's not identified to the individual, that might be cheaper. Like, you might be able to see pricing that's a tenth the price, but the identifiable to the individual with their plan might be 10 times more. You see what I'm saying? So it might make sense for you to buy, get the same thing for a tenth of the price versus your negotiated rate, which might be 10 times higher. That's identified to you as the individual.
So just as a bit of a segue, I think that's helpful. It seems like we're trying to maybe shift into the price information conversation, which is very relevant and on the agenda. But I just want to make sure that we've dotted all the I's on this issue here before we move on to the price information. So and anyone chime in, but what I'm understanding is that everyone seems to be in favor of this addition to clarify that EPHI is defined in HIPAA. Does anyone have any thoughts on this change that I believe Andy and Michael made from can to could? Again, I don't think, in my opinion, legally, it makes any difference in the definition. So I might, you know, lean towards not changing it. But if you all think it's a good change, that would be fine. You're happy to leave it. Do people have thoughts on that? I think the original text is – yeah, go ahead.
I'm where you're at in that I'm not sure it changes anything. So leave well enough alone if you're not accomplishing anything with the change.
Are you calling out anything specific, Mark?
I think Andy and Michael, the right here it says, is the reasonable basis to believe the information, and it used to say in the definition can be used, and they changed it to could be used. And what I'm saying is, like, you know, in regulatory text, it's really important, these words, but I don't believe can and could are really interpreted any differently in this context. At least I wouldn't think so.
So I'm not a lawyer, but I think it's probably worth your ask of your lawyers to say, does it? Because the only thing I would say is, does it allow for ambiguity? And could, is could subjective when can is determinative? I don't know if determinative is a word, guys, but I might have just made up a new word. But, you know,
is
I think
present and could is past. So I think, I don't know if that was his intent, but typically can is present and could is past.
Michael, I know you can't talk too much with your voice. Can you give any context for what you and Andy were thinking with this one?
That was all Andy. That wasn't me. I don't mind throwing him on the bus. He's not here.
And I had talked with him, and I think he didn't really mind changing it back. So how about I'll make a note of it. I'm going to change it back. Cynthia, I'll just throw it back to you. If you think that can doesn't get at the right meaning, you know, feel free to propose a different meaning. But the interpretation of can and could, like Cheryl mentioned, I think it's just the tense, really. It's not one of them is not prescriptive and the other is, you know, non-prescriptive. They're both kind of, I think, have the same effect. So I'll make a note as far as another removed proposed addition right here. So
I wasn't in
beyond
the stage.
neither was I by any means. So I definitely understand. So it sounds like, and again, with the caveat that I know, John, your position is that clause or with respect to should be pulled out, and I guess maybe you'll consider whether you want to, you know, write out a little rationale and include it in our final recommendations as to why your position is that should be out, even if maybe the group leaves it in. But beyond that, it seems like we're all in agreement on this definition. Is that fair to say?
Fair.
Yes.
Great.
Agree.
Great. Well, and Cynthia, are you okay? Is that accurate? Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I don't know. I just, like I said, you'd have to ask the legal opinion if it makes a difference. I don't know if it does. So, you know, I have to say I don't know. But
okay,
yeah,
but beyond that issue,
yeah,
it might just be a British thing. Who knows? But beyond,
I don't know.
Maybe it's a Texas thing.
Yeah, it's a combination.
I don't
there.
Know. I think you spent a lot more time in England.
Okay, so, but I guess, Cynthia, speaking more broadly beyond the can or could issue, are you okay moving forward with this definition as we have it, with the only change being that we say as defined in HIPAA for EPHI?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Great. Well, then, do you all want to shift to the price information discussion then? Does that make sense now?
I think it does.
Yes.
Also, unfortunately, I have to leave at the 1:30 for another meeting I couldn't get out of.
Okay. Well, thanks for the heads up. We'll try to get much done between now and 1:30 then. Okay. So just, again, as a little bit of background, in the rule, we say we have both a request for comment and a request for information, I believe, with respect to price information. We say To be clear, this definition provides for an expansive set of EHI, which could include information of an individual's health insurance eligibility and benefits, billing for healthcare services, and payment information for services to be provided or already provided, which may include price information. So the conversation you were just having, we do say that the definition of EHI currently includes price information. And then we have the request for comment, request for information that is both on a departmental level at HHS and also ONC level here. And I can pull up that language, but that's just to set the stage. And let me see what we've said already. Let me scroll down here. We have quite a bit. So does anyone want to jump in on where you're falling with price information or what any proposed recommendations that should be made? Or price transparency, excuse me. If not, I can read over. I know, John, you've said that you like hearing, I believe, the stuff. I can read what we have currently in the discussion section, if that would be helpful.
I just need a minute to process it.
Yeah, take your time.
Mark, you've got a 2 there that should be a T-O-O.
Okay, where is that? Sorry.
Third line, too tightly.
Aha. Not to blame Andy, but I'll blame Andy.
He's from another country.
I think that's a solid plan. Blame Andy whenever we
can. Yeah, well, if he's not on the call, it's fair game. But and whenever you all are done reading this, it might be helpful. I'm happy to pull onto the screen the page or two we have in the rule about price information, just, you know, to read it over for the context of this conversation. If that'd be helpful, I'm happy to do that.
I think that would be helpful.
Okay, let me do that. Should I do that now?
So you're going to say you're going to read it?
I was going to pull over the specific language we have in the rule. So here's where it starts, and this is at the end of the discussion about electronic health information. So I'll give you a minute to read that line, or those four lines. Okay, and then we have this section, and I'll scroll down slowly, but it's this request
for
information.
Sorry about that. I'll pull it up from my bottom.
Take your time. All right, so here's this, and I'll keep going down slowly. And as I'm scrolling, we're getting close now to the actual request for comment that we have in here.
Mark, this is John. Not to break the silence here, but so the questions in the preamble are, you know, that's a good 6 hours of discussion, right?
Yep.
And this is what ONC is asking for feedback on through. So what would be constructive use of our time today? Let that question be on the parking lot for a second. I liked the comments that I think they're in the Google Doc that you showed earlier. That my understanding is that those comments assert the following, that pricing information is currently included in the definition of electronic health information that we've written, and that a regulation is contemplated by ONC that will target specifically price transparency, and therefore the information blocking rule having pricing information defined within EHI in that it's related to the past, future, or present, whatever the words are, payment for healthcare, being that pricing information is included in the definition of EHI, then information blocking assures that when a future price transparency rule is written, that information blocking regulations will prevent that information from being blocked. So the two work in tandem. That's how I interpreted those comments, and I think that's appropriate.
Yeah, no, I think that's right, and I think you're absolutely right that if this group wanted to get through all of the bulleted questions I just flagged, it would take a while. And I guess the amount of detail you all want to get into, it really depends on on the group. But, I think what you're saying is right. I mean, we do, as I pointed out, currently as written, pricing information is included in the definition of electronic health information, and we do say as such in the preamble. I think what we're looking for is, and it seems like everyone's in agreement based on past conversations, that should be the case. I think maybe what we're asking for, is not to regurgitate the language, but the parameters and implications of including price information within the scope of EHI for the purpose of information blocking on the ONC level. So that's like for ONC's purposes, but also on the departmental level. If you all have thoughts on the technical and operational and legal, cultural and environmental and other challenges to creating price transparency within healthcare. I know that's broad, but just thinking, you know, prospectively, we want to think through all the implications of what we might be doing, whether it's in this rule or in future rules.
Mark?
Yes.
It's Mark, right, yes, thank you. Thank you. And I'd like to commend ONC and CMS for their leadership in asking the request for information on pricing. Because it's a bold move, and it's a much-needed move. And we're at a moment in time where this information blocking rule and the administration can actually deliver the best quality care at the lowest possible price for both the consumer, the employer, our government, and our economy. So thank you. Secondly, I would like to note on the third sentence that I disagree with the third sentence in the first paragraph of the work group.
Thank you, that you have just highlighted in blue. I believe that this information blocking and these information blocking tools, as John just alluded to, do support the definition of the electronic health information and the patient getting access to past, present, and future pricing. I am concerned about the words that information blocking regulations too tightly to the regulations may have unintended consequences of slowing down information blocking regulation. I disagree with that. I believe that if we don't treat past, present, and future payment information with in conjunction with the rest of the electronic health records, that we're actually going to slow down drastically changing the lives of our American public for the better.
I'm sorry, I'm confused.
Right now,
I thought that pricing...
You know, my so I would like to flip that on its head, that we have this moment of time where it's really easy to... It is easy to pull back that cloak, because those contract negotiated terms and those prices have been baked into the systems. The EHRs were originally, the whole systems was built originally on billing and pricing and contracted terms. So then the records came after that, the clinical records and notes in the history of digitization. So now we're in a place where we can open the kimono and actually deliver to the patient really consumer-driven healthcare. And so I think that if we, I would like to see our work group encourage that the information blocking regulations are utilized to provide pricing and payment information to the patient, and we do it timely along with the other rulemaking of this rule.
I'm confused in that the very next paragraph says that it's clear that pricing information is part of the definition.
Yes, but I don't agree with the sentence above, where tying information blocking regs to pricing, I think it is part of it. And we then just agree that we're using the information blocking, that if providers and payers do not provide the prices, that they're information blocking to the patient. You know, we have patients that have come to us that have hundreds of thousands of dollars of unknown surprise billings. That devastates their lives. They get divorced over it. They go bankrupt over it. And thanks to this administration, you know, we're at this moment of time where that this rulemaking can hold players accountable to deliver that pricing up front.
Violently agree. The question is, what is the efficient, effective regulatory path to solve that problem?
And John, I can't remember what you said last meeting we talked about this, but I think you said you framed it really well. So if you could remember what you said, I encourage you to do so. But I think it's what you were getting at was that, like it says here, the price information is included currently in the definition of EHI. So as written, our rule would not preclude in any way, you know, including price information when we're looking at information blocking. However, to what extent should this regulation get really into the price transparency issue, I think is what we're getting at.
I think this regulation helps dramatically in moving towards price transparency because it has a very broad definition of actors, which goes well beyond HIPAA-covered entities. It has a broad definition of electronic health information, which, as it states right there, is included in the definition of health information. And it's a federal law that says you can't not share it. So if that doesn't help with price transparency, it does. And so I can't repeat exactly what I said last time because I've slept since then. But I think it's a matter of just trying to use the info blocking regulation accomplishes a lot in terms of making that information it'll be against federal law not to share it. So good. I think the question is, do you try and I think the metaphor I may have used last time is, you know, use a hammer to drive nails and a screwdriver to put in screws. Is if there needs to be, I contend that to accomplish price transparency further after having defined what information blocking is, including that the definition of EHI includes that information, to go further in trying to get the industry to be price transparent will require a more precise take at that regulation. We just don't have the we got a hammer here, not a screwdriver, and a screwdriver will be needed to go with the hammer.
I can support future regulation and see the intent. I mean, it is an RFI, and we have the opportunity to utilize this regulation for the enforcement of compliance. So I think we're at a moment in time where we can do the work. And, you know, if you look in the tech industry, across the spectrum, having transparency gives the simple aggregated ability to Uberize, the patient's tools to determine where to go and get their care that's affordable to their wallet. So, you know, I think we're, the sooner we, my concern is the third sentence, and I just think if we eliminate that, you know, we're fine, and we can do our job and answer the questions that ONC has asked of us in this RFI. I just would be concerned that it's not our job to slow it down. And I think it's our job to help HHS deliver real price transparency to the marketplace as soon as they can.
This is Cheryl. I don't think, Cynthia, that the intent of that sentence is to slow anything down. I think the concern that was being expressed was that if you tie the two regulations together too tightly, one could hold up the other. That's all that Andy was trying to communicate. And, you know, it seems that that's being taken a different way. Depending on how the receivers of the information process it, you know, just look at how long TEFCA has taken. I do think that's a real concern, and I do think it's something that can be called out. It doesn't mean one is any less important than the other. It just means that whatever we do, we should try to keep them, I think, as independently as possible so that they're one does not hold up the other. We wouldn't want to hold up information blocking for the price transparency rule to come out, and likewise, we wouldn't want information blocking to hold up the price transparency rule.
And while people are thinking that over, I just wanted to make a point that there is a request for and a request for information in the rule about price information. So just wanted to be clear on that because I know since Cynthia said request for information.
I'm sorry. Could you say that again, Mark?
There's a request for comment. So we have the request for comment and a request for information regarding price transparency. So basically all I'm saying is that, you know, request comment on, I think, you know, the definition of EHI and the inclusion of price information. Also the request for information more broadly about future rulemaking. I just wanted to make that point.
Thank you. Thank you for your clarifications, and I apologize for misspeaking. So, yeah.
Oh, no, right. It's one of those complexities of rulemaking, so I just wanted to be clear. But anyway, back to Cheryl's point. Does anyone have any thoughts on that?
If there are requests for comment, then I believe that even behooves us more so to comment and lay the path and the conduit to get this done. So I would support our working on those questions to get it in.
So I guess maybe what I'm hearing is that perhaps Andy and Michael and with input from the group might want to consider restructuring this sentence I have highlighted. But generally speaking, sounds like, just to paraphrase, the group believes that price information should be included in the definition of EHI as we have it. Price transparency should be addressed on some level, just kind of, different views about maybe how much it should be addressed with what specificity in this regulation versus future rulemaking. Is that accurate?
Well, I just disagree with it. So, you know, I just think that we need to comment and enable it. And to me, this sentence looks for us as a group to ask for delay of gain. And I don't think that's fair to the American public or American employers. And I just think that we can respond to the comments that you're asking to, and should there be future rulemaking on pricing, then we've done the work utilizing the information blocking Cures Act to help support future rulemaking in addition to this one.
Okay, so this is Michael. I don't think that anybody's trying to throw a delay of gain flag by putting this in there. I think it's just the recognition of the fact that tying them too tightly could cause delays either way with both, just like Mark said. The thing that I would recommend, so that we don't keep going back and forth on this point, is that if there are other, you know, if that's the one sentence in there that people don't agree with, this document is live and can be typed into. I would recommend that we type into there what we want to. This is comments, not recommendation. So if you have comments, just, you know, initial it and put your name there, and let's add to it. I hear what you're saying, Cynthia, that, you know, we're not trying to kick the can down the road, but there will, I think we would be, quite frankly, I think that we would be naive to think that tying these two issues too closely and not going into the entire depth of what information blocking, I mean, price transparency is going to cause, could cause delay. That's all this is saying, is that it could cause delay. I mean,
okay,
we've already. Can I finish my point first? Hold on just a second.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to be rude there. I apologize.
No, that's okay. What I was saying is I don't think that we shouldn't address it. I'm not saying that we shouldn't address it. All I'm saying is that it was a sentence put in there to state, and we can reword the statement, that tying these together to try to address all of price transparency in a work group where we haven't been able to get through the definitions completely yet, has the potential of delaying either one of these, either one or both. That's all that statement was meant to say.
Okay. That was Michael?
Yes.
Michael? So, Michael, let me point out to you, in that sentence, it says that slowing down information blocking, that price transparency, that is an already daunting task. You know, that's an opinion. That's one person. You know, the issue is that I'm looking at price transparency and consulting tech companies on what if it were transparent in whatever ugly format, like Chargemaster prices, list pricing, goes out into the atmosphere. How long would it take these tech companies to aggregate, and having surveyed five different tech companies, they're salivating to do it. And they told me they could do it, you know, on average, each one of them said 3 months. That they could have it into an app and aggregated and a utilizable tool for patients within 3 months. So I think it behooves us to not say that it's a daunting task. And I don't think it's, you know, I think the reason why we've spent this amount of time is, gosh, you know, we can change the game of healthcare. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've helped people file bankruptcy because they got breast cancer. You know, we can change that because of these egregious charges with no understanding of what it's going to cost us. So, you know, this is a moment in time where it's not daunting. It's
absolutely necessary. And I'm sorry I've been a dog with a bone on this, but, you know, when you file bank, you help people out, it's devastating out there. 20% of our population is in medical debt. You know, it's a significant, it behooves us to do the right thing. And I just think we don't want to put opinions in to delay the game.
Cynthia, I feel like I've agreed with you so many times that we agree that it is a serious national problem. So can we just agree that we agree with you? It's just a question of the correct regulatory path to get that thing that we all want.
Okay, but I sit on this committee and I just view that third sentence as subjective. And the others that we have are more factual. So I guess that's, you know, where I land, is saying that we're putting something in that to me looks like a flag to delay the game. And it's subjective. It's not a daunting task.
Well, the daunting task that we're talking about, if you read the way the sentence is written, the daunting task is the information blocking regulation finalization. I don't know about you. I know you've been on these calls and the task force calls. That part is a daunting task. It's not saying that price transparency is a daunting task. It's saying that tying the two too closely together could have unintended consequences. That's all it's saying. The information blocking rule finalization is a daunting task. That's why we spent, on average, 12 hours a week for the last 3 weeks on calls, is trying to, and in this work group, only trying to get through the definitions. That is a fact. It is a daunting task. It's not saying that price transparency is a daunting task. That's all that I'm reading in that. I certainly would welcome anyone. Again, this is just comments. It's not meant to be right or wrong. I think that we're all in agreement that price transparency is a huge issue that has to be solved. And Cynthia, the only thing I want to say is I have witnessed firsthand with my parents how medical bills, through the death of my brother when he was a child with cancer, through my father's disability, through my mother's chronic diseases and strokes, I have seen the bankruptcies. I have seen the bills come in. I have seen all of that. Believe me, I want it to be solved just as much as anyone else. I think everybody on the work group is, and I haven't heard anybody dissenting yet, is in agreement that that needs to happen. I think that that one statement is only saying that we agree it needs to happen, that it could have unintended consequences of slowing things down, and it could. I'm not saying it will, it could. But I certainly, you know, as you're looking at the Google Doc and not driving, if you want to type some things in or change something or voice that you don't think that one statement is correct, I certainly think that's perfectly appropriate. I think we're all in agreement with you that pricing transparency is important.
Well, and just to piggyback on you, Michael, and I agree with everything you all are saying. Not that it matters, because I'm not coming up with these recommendations. But what I would say is that I don't think we should necessarily dwell too much on this one sentence. I think that sentence could easily be tweaked to more accurately reflect the sentiments of the group. I think what we need to be thinking about more is big picture. What are the recommendations that you all want to make? If you are in agreement, like, do you want to go through the questions that you know I had on the screen earlier? Cynthia, do you want to come up with specific recommendations that you might want to, you know, float by the group about how you think this rule should address price transparency, or a future rule should address price transparency? Because I think that's the level of specificity that would be helpful for ONC and HHS at the departmental level.
Okay, so I think, you know, we could all look at, then each of us on this task force looking at drafting question by question. I think Andy suggested this in a previous call, is how we answer the questions, you know, ONC has one by one on the issue. And then we come together on those. So, you know, yes, move forward, and, you know, we can just tweak that. And, you know, thank you for supporting patients here, a little passionate about what we've seen and witnessed. So thank you. And do others agree that it would be helpful to just add comments into each of these as a breakdown to look at transparency?
I was giving John a chance to respond. I do. I think that looking at this offline and entering our comments is probably the most effective way of going forward. I think that there is a lot of passion around this issue, and I certainly think that anybody that's involved in healthcare and isn't focused on the patients is focused on the wrong things. So I agree with you completely. I do think that we should do as much of this offline as we can and come back to refine, because we are getting – I'm not saying that we're out of time, but we are getting limited on time in our recommendations, and that is the one piece that, you know, our portion of the work group with definitions is what we were tasked with doing, and I want to make sure that at the very least we get finished with all of that, the required work, and then all the work that we can get done in addition to that. So I think that's a great suggestion, Cynthia.
Yeah, and Cheryl, there's – oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for Cheryl and others that are in the payer side of the equation that have – it would be really helpful to understand how, you know, when we can see price transparency, how would we see where the prices might be at the individual level, the net negotiated price posted, so that, you know, we prevent situations where a primary care doc sends a patient within, I mean, this happened in my own family, within the hospital system for a blood test that charge master rate was $4,300. The negotiated rate by our TPA was $3,300. If we went three blocks down the street and could see the price, it would have been $200. So a $700 out-of-pocket versus a $20 out-of-pocket and a $200. So if, you know, by the same negotiated care contract terms, so I think, you know, within the same insurance system with no visibility to it. So that, you know, those things add up to families, and I think if we could get from their perspective how they can do it at the individual basis, but also seeing, well, heck, if there's even a $100 test and the patient can pay $100 out of pocket versus $3,300 plus $700 out of, you know, $3,300 from the insurer, the self-employed employer, and $700 from the patient, I mean, we should be able to have visibility into those offsets. And so how do we do this? I think as we approach this problem, be really helpful to say, okay, we're in a moment of time where the consumer can drive their choices. How, and just from your perspective, it's going to change game, and how that competitive marketplace can enable good decisions to keep people from bankruptcy and keep people from debt.
Well, I know that Cheryl sent a note that she had to drop off, so I know she had mentioned she had to drop off at 1:30, so she was not able to hear that.
Okay, so I guess it sounds like what we're going to do then is that everyone in this group, and maybe Michael, you and Andy, could send out something just for the folks that aren't on the call right now, just as a bit of homework maybe, to like go through the, you know, specific request for comments and information in the rule, and bring back either through comments in the Google Doc or just commentary on our next call, thoughts on how to, you know, answer or address some of those questions. If, you know, you all don't have to necessarily answer every question if you don't want to, but the types of things, Cynthia, you just mentioned would be helpful to clarify as a group what would be included in the price information that we're talking about, and how we would define the parameters and scope. I think that would be really helpful.
That's correct, Mark. I think that's exactly what we need to do. And I prefer, and I'll send this out, I'll talk to Andy and then I'll send it out as well, is I would prefer us to put it in the Google Doc so that we can look at it. And again, I don't know that I have comments on every question, but the ones that I do, I'm going to put comments down just so we can have something to look at and people can see it as they're looking at the Google Doc. I know that it may seem like additional work, but if we can go in and everybody agrees with a statement, it's a lot easier for it to be in there than for us to try to dictate it or type it as we're going.
Great.
Awesome. When would you want that information in?
Mark, when's the, I don't have my calendar pulled up. I'm sorry. What's our next, when's our next meeting?
So our next meeting with this group is tomorrow, I believe.
Okay.
Tomorrow. So how about, so I think we're running short on time today, so maybe we didn't get quite to the other big topic, which, you know, it's connected, so I think you'd want to try to think about this between now and tomorrow, which is health information networks and exchanges. But, so maybe do some homework on that, because we'll bring that up first thing on the agenda tomorrow. But to your question, Cynthia, for the next call we have, definitely, which would be a week from today, I believe, so maybe have your thoughts and ideas about those questions that ONC poses, maybe in the Google Doc to set a time frame by, I don't know, COB Monday, maybe, so people can have a day or two to react. Does that seem reasonable?
I think that's reasonable,
yeah.
Yes. I don't think we should spend time focusing
on that. Yeah, that sounds reasonable. So tomorrow we do HIEs and HINs, and then we get all of our comments in by Monday.
Yes,
yep.
That's great.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Great, and I think that'll really be a good conversation. I think we've made a lot of really good headway on this, but I think having people's thoughts on paper just to look at, and I can pull it up on the screen, will be really helpful to keep it moving. So that'd be great.
Agreed.
Thank you all.
Are we going to talk at all about HIE, HIN before we get off today? Because I have one really quick thing that might help tee us up for the next call.
Yeah. Well, so if the group is ready to move on to that for the last 7 or so minutes of this call?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Great.
So
go ahead, John.
Yeah. So at the bottom of the – let me make sure it's the bottom of the Google Doc. Well, it's not really even at the bottom. Under – on the bottom of page – I just had it up here. Andy says another suggested approach. Oh, another approach. It's on the bottom of page 9. He asked me about this when we were out in D.C., and I just wanted to call it out as I think something worth considering is the definitions of HIE and HIN are not that different, and the distinction I think I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think I'm trying to agree with his proposed approach here, which is it's not helpful to separate the two. So, and it is clearer to just smush them together into one definition. So I'm just calling out his suggested approach on the bottom of page 9 for consideration.
And would I'm trying. I pulled it up on the screen, but just thinking it through. If you did make that recommendation, would you use one of the existing definitions, or would you all want to come up with a hybrid definition of some sort?
I'm trying to read and see if his if he gets so far as to answering that question in his comment. Do you know?
Not sure. There's a lot. You know, and it's something maybe just to think. We don't have too much time today. Something to think about for the next call. I mean, do others have thoughts about that? About grouping HIEs and HINs together in one definition?
Well, I think that adds like a whole other level of potential confusion. I think Cures Act refers to networks and exchanges separately. ONC has done we just spent the last meeting going through the individual definitions of HIE and HIN. And I just think that, you know, there have been a lot of folks that put a lot of thought into the two categories. So now for us to go into a new frontier of combining them may be exhaustive.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go first.
I was just going to say, just to, back up what Cynthia said, I do think it's somewhat problematic from our perspective, again, not to direct your recommendations in any way, but when you know, from our perspective, when we read Cures, it does lay out those four actor groups, and it seems to me that the Congress was pretty clear that those were two different groups of actors, and you know, that's why we define them separately. So just a note that that would, from my perspective, be problematic.
And one of my comments that we've discussed on an earlier call was, can you provide examples in the preamble that would help those organizations know what ONC was thinking of them as? Because if I could, maybe it would help for the next call, if you could offer an example of an organization that met the definition of a health information network that did not meet the definition of an HIE, and vice versa, offer a definition of a health information exchange that does not meet the definition of an HIN, then I think that would help me understand the separation, because right now the definitions, I think, and this is Andy's point, and I'm trying to echo him and agree, is that as written, it's a lot less confusing, because I can't think of one organization that isn't both, that's in either category.
Okay, I'm happy to look. I mean, I know I say a lot. I think we do have that quite a bit of discussion about this in preamble, but I'm happy to reread that and come back with hopefully some examples or use cases to discuss. And maybe just as far as additional homework for our discussion tomorrow, if you all could reread the preamble discussion about HIEs and HINs, I think that'd be helpful to inform our conversation.
And that's, I'm looking at the, that's 339 to 44.
Yeah, let me see. It's in the Google Doc, but yeah, let me see. It's, yeah, so 339. Yep.
Yeah, that's what I was reading off of.
Great. Yep. That's right. But yeah, I, John, I think it's a great point, and I think definitely something we should talk about tomorrow, because you're right. If we do say that they're different groups, that it should be a clear distinction, and that was our goal. So if that's not clear, then it should be.
Yeah, I hope that everyone can come ready tomorrow. I'm hoping that we can make some good headway with that, with HIE, HIN, and those definitions tomorrow. It is maybe a minute before time to go to public comment, so I think that unless somebody has a brief statement to add, we should go ahead and move the public comment if at all possible. Hearing none, can we go to public comment?
Sure. Thanks, Michael. Operator, can we open the public line?
If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to move your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
None at this time.
Okay. All right. We have the number up for a few minutes, so hopefully that gave folks time to dial in. But I will hand it back to you, Mark and Michael, for any last-minute remarks.
Okay. All right. Let me get Michael, what do you want to do here?
No, I just wanted to say that, you know, I appreciate all the comments and all the points of view and the discussion. I hope nobody gets the wrong idea by my pushing that I'm trying to stifle any of that discussion. I'm really not. I'm just trying to get to the point where we can have some solid recommendations moving forward. Not that they be the wrong recommendations, but that we get to a point where we have recommendations, even if that means that we have to have multiple recommendations. I just wanted to remind everybody that we need to be looking at those questions for the meeting. We need to look at the questions around price transparency and have those into the Google Docs by Monday close of business, and also be prepared by looking at the HIE, HIN, the comments that Andy put on there, anything in the preamble, and be ready to have that discussion tomorrow. And hopefully we'll be able to close out the majority of that discussion tomorrow and come up with some recommendations on how we think that should look around HIEs and HINs or HIE, HIN together, however we're going to go about that. But if at all possible, wherever possible, go ahead and put comments into the Google Doc. That helps. I know that I pull it up quite often to look and see what people have written. If you get that opportunity, that would be great.
All right, and Michael, do you want to end early today and maybe give people a few more minutes to do that homework? Does that sound good?
Sure, unless John or Cynthia, if y'all have something you want to add at the end, go ahead. If not, we'll end a few minutes early, knowing that we're going to have another spirited conversation tomorrow and probably a couple next week as well. So if you have something to say, certainly say it. I don't want to block anybody. I don't want to do any information blocking here by blocking anyone from saying what they want to say. But I know most people could use 8 or 9 minutes back at the end of their day.
I'm already reading the preamble, so I'm good to let it go.
Cynthia?
Likewise. All right. We'll do our homework.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everyone. All right. Bye-bye. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye-bye.